Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Hooton, Judge Riley, the Honorable Francis Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated. All right. First case this morning, I hope I pronounced this correctly, is Geiske et al. Versus Nicollet County Drainage Authority. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes, and then appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just please approach the microphone, adjust the podium to your level. It does go up and down. That's why it costs $500,000. And tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Vattendahl. I represent the appellants in this case, some of whom are here today. And beginning with the issue at hand in this case, it is a question of whether the appellants have effectively achieved service of process in a manner other than allowed by the rules.
So you do admit that unless there's a waiver, that this was not effective under the rules.
Yes, ma'am. And we've tried to be clear about that from the beginning. I think that there's been a few red herring issues in this case, and we're trying to be very clear about the matter. So, yes, if we did not successfully get service of process by an agreement for service by means other than provided in the rule, then we're out.
Okay. Is there any evidence in the record, though, that there was any discussion or agreements prior to the time that your clients came into the office?
No, Judge.
To make service, so.
No, Judge.
And what is the purpose, the underlying purpose for the rule that a party can't serve?
And there's been obviously a fair amount of discussion. The respondent in particular emphasizes this question, and it seems to be that the purpose of the rule is to avoid potential confrontations between actual parties to a case when the service is occurring. Frankly, that's the only reason that I can think of for...
Sounds like a good reason to me.
Well, yes, and it does. But I would submit that it's not a reason that rises to the level of categorically rejecting any agreement for this type of service. And this really goes to the DeCook case, and where the DeCook case clearly recognizes that... agreements for service in a manner other than provided by the rules.
But, you know, in that case, and I forgive me if I'm wrong, do I pronounce right, Mr. Vattendahl?
Yes, Judge.
Vattendahl? You know, that's the one with the medical mal and the back and forth between the lawyers, you know, several emails. I mean, that's, I would have thought in looking at that opinion that, you know, the... that a fair point would be made that the person was being led to believe that they were going to accept service. I didn't see, as Judge Hooton so thoughtfully pointed out, any kind of, you know, pre-emails, hey, we're coming, is this going to be okay?
No.
Hey, I called you, I got somebody in the clerk's office or, you know, the auditor's office say, hey, you know, oh, yeah, that's okay, we do that all the time.
Yeah.
There's none of that, right?
You're correct, Judge. There was none of that in this
case.
Now,
what if I... what if the person at the desk who signed the form, what if the form said, we agree with the merits of your case and are happy to enter a default judgment? Do you think that piece of paper would have worked?
No, Judge, because in that case, I think it's first of all, I mean, one would need to establish that this person had authority. So I'm assuming in your question that the person that's reading this and signing it is actually the county auditor, not simply a clerk in that office.
What if the person that said, we agree, I hereby waive personal or subject matter or all defects to arguments as to jurisdiction. Do you think that piece of paper would be valid? I mean, the parties can't agree to waive certain things.
That's correct. There is limitations on that, but the threshold question here, I think, is under DeCook, do we categorically reject arguments for agreement for service by a party? Or is the question whether an agreement for service by a party allowable as a category, and then we look to the issue of whether or not the agreement existed in the present case.
Is there any evidence in this record that the auditor in this case was an attorney?
No, Your Honor, and the auditor was not an attorney, but I will say that it is also clear in the record that part of the auditor's duties are to accept service of process on behalf of drainage authorities.
All right. Well, I mean, because if you look at the underlying purpose, and I'm just trying to understand how your interpretation of what went on here is in accordance with the goal of this rule, which is to avoid controversy. If, in fact, you know, your clients went there without notice and said, I have a document, you're going to have to sign for it, it would seem that If in fact, whatever, in order to get the document to know what they're talking about, and they have to sign whatever document's pushed in front of them, how would that keep the parties from getting into a fight?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that kind of just engender the fight?
And following up, and particularly if that person said, you know, I'm not going to accept it.
Right.
And then, you know, I have been a judge long enough to know that a lot of people who show up at the counter are usually very angry, and then the people behind the counter have to spend a lot of time calming them down.
Yep.
And it seems to me this is a perfect example of why we have the rule, particularly when it relates to public employees serving the public. I mean, that's a tough enough job as it is.
Well, and I certainly agree with that, Your Honor, but I would first of all point out that the facts, Judge Hooten, that you describe are not the facts of this case. There is no evidence in this case that the appellant said, you have to sign in order to receive this document. In fact, it was a transaction with minimal language at all. And likewise, there is no evidence that there was any stress or strife in the interaction.
Well, I understand that, but you're talking about how we interpret this rule and how we apply it.
Yes, Judge. The reason that that's important is because I think that a threshold question here is whether acceptance by a party is categorically rejected as something that can be agreed upon.
All right. You mean acceptance by a party or service?
Or service by a party. I'm sorry, Judge. Yes. Yes, because if we say that from a categorical standpoint, there can be circumstances in which service by a party is agreed upon, if that's acceptable as a category, then we move to the facts of this particular case to look at whether or not there was agreement in this case.
But was there anything in this agreement that indicated a waiver of any known legal rights?
No, Judge, but I will point out that that is also true of the admission of service that was signed in the DeCook case.
But in that case, I mean, as Judge Connolly pointed out, there was attorney involvement, and so there was some evidence of known legal rights being waived pursuant to the exchange of emails.
Judge, there was attorney involvement on one side. I don't believe that the decision indicates that there was any attorney involvement there was attorney involvement on the side seeking to achieve service. I don't believe that the decision indicates any attorney involvement on the side receiving service.
Well, isn't that one of the main distinctions between this case and DeCook? In that, in DeCook, it wasn't a party serving.
That's right. It was a different violation of the rule. And so my point is, it's our position that DeCook does not stand for the notion that only this violation of the rule can be agreed to, and DeCook doesn't say that. Our contention is that, as a category, service by a party can be agreed to.
I, I have another question. It's on a different topic. There were 18 landowners whose property was impacted by this drainage ditch. Is that right?
12, I believe, Your Honor. Well, 12 petitioners.
That's what I'm getting to. Oh. But initially, there were 18 landowners, as I understand the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
And 12 of them petitioned to appeal the decision.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so there are 6 others who didn't join that appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the judge noted, the district court judge noted that one of those was a Lynn Fleege. I'm sorry.
Yes, I believe that's correct, Judge.
And she also was never served.
Well, Your Honor, that gets to the second point that respondents are attempting to raise with this court, which is whether or not, which is the effect of the fact that appellants have not served all of the property owners affected by this project. And as I noted in my reply brief, first of all, that issue is not properly before this court because the district court judge expressly refused to decide any issue except the issue of agreement to an alternate means of service of process. I mean, if you want me to continue on to the merits of that discussion, I certainly can.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure I had the facts clear in my mind.
Yes, Judge. Continue on. If in fact the this is a category of alternate service that is available to be agreed to, then we reach the issue of determining the proof of the agreement. And I think the law is quite clear. We, as the appellants, we need to bring some evidence that there was an agreement, at which point the burden shifts to the respondents to prove that there was not an agreement.
Well, didn't the judge look at that evidence, though, and decide that this was insufficient waiver? I mean, isn't that essentially what the court did here?
Judge, the district court judge did address this question. The decision of the district court judge is not entirely clear as to whether the judge found that appellants did not submit any evidence of an agreement or that appellants did submit evidence of an agreement, but that respondents successfully rebutted it. I would say that the language in the decision kind of goes two different ways. But I would say that if the district court judge's decision was that we submitted no evidence of an agreement, that frankly is clearly erroneous.
But let me ask you this. So the district court has several pages of background in its order.
Yes.
And I don't think you're contesting any of those findings of fact in the background. Is that right?
I'm not contesting any findings of fact, but I am but we do disagree with an inference that the district court judge draws, which I mention in our briefs, the inference being that the county auditor did not agree. The county auditor's affidavits, which are the only real evidence on the record in this matter, they do not say that she did not agree to accept service. They say that she, it was established that she read the document, signed it, made a copy of it. She viewed the language as being simply a receipt. Now, that's, of course, entirely different from the language of the document itself.
Well, paragraph in the middle of the page 4 of the order says, according to Tim Geiske, he inquired of Ms. Coppett whether a payment was needed at that time. And Ms. Coppett told him that he should file the notice of appeal with the district court and make payment there. He averts that this caused him to believe that he had done everything necessary to commence the appeal.
Yes, Judge. From my client's standpoint, with that exchange having occurred, that's correct. He thought that he was finished dealing with the county auditor in this regard.
Well, He just asked her whether he needed to make a payment.
I believe he asked her whether he needed to make a payment and then where it was supposed to be made, if I remember right. Yeah, and that it was simply, you know, he had an understanding that there was another step in beginning this process, and he was asking her about that other, that next step. Now, returning back to the judge.
Well, can I ask you this? Because I mean, as I view the district court's order,
yes.
The court said there's no evidence this auditor was an attorney.
Yes.
There's no evidence that she knew what the legal ramifications were of accepting this document. And in fact, the court, I mean, why is it clearly erroneous for the court to make the reasonable inference that she thought she was just receiving the document?
Your Honor, I see
that's apparently what the court found.
Please answer Judge Hooten's question. I'll give you that time.
Thank you. Judge, what I was labeling as clearly erroneous before was the fact that we submitted no evidence of an agreement. And it's my position that submitting the signed admission of service is evidence. You might not think it's adequate evidence to put it over the line, but it's certainly evidence of an agreement, at which point the burden of proof shifts. And then we get into the analysis of whether or not they successfully rebutted. I see my time is up. Thank you.
I'll wait.
And you will have rebuttal. We'll hear for counsel from the respondent, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Michelle Zunder Fisher, Nicollet County Attorney, representing the Respondent Drainage Authority in this matter. Before I get caught up in the fact or the legal argument, I would like to go back to Judge Riley's question regarding the number of landowners involved.
29.
There's 75% of the landowners on this system itself that were not served in any manner with service of process, and I only believe it was one or two of the original appellants that served the notice of appeal. I just couldn't count and listen at the same time. So it's a very small minority of the original people seeking the improvement petition that actually filed the notice of appeal. The heart of the issue really here is whether the personal service of process of this notice of appeal by three parties to the appeal of the improvement order on an opposing party is effective service. And I think in looking at that argument, this court in its questions of appellant have really hit on the central tenets that are critical about service of process. And those rules and those tenets are that service in a manner not authorized by the rules is ineffective and deprives the court of personal jurisdiction. Strict compliance with the rules of service is required. Things like substantial compliance, good faith compliance is not sufficient, and even actual notice that an appeal is being made or an action is being started is insufficient. And that ineffective service of process requires dismissal even if the result of that is harsh. And the reason for these rules is that the rules of service are intended to provide a single uniform procedure to allow for consistent application of the rules. And I think the heart of what counsel has argued is that, well, we need to look here because it didn't get acrimonious. And really that's the heart of why party-to-party service isn't acceptable, is because of that risk of the acrimony of one party serving another with a lawsuit. I'm serving you. And that leads to acrimony, as Judge Conley noted, people coming to the window.
Well, perhaps everyone in Nicollet County is much more polite.
I can assert to the court that there is no matter that results in more people coming to county board meetings than drainage matters. But here, I think it transcends the risk of acrimony, as I believe Judge Hooten indicated, is that not only was there delivery of the service, but an accompanied, you need to sign this that I'm presenting with you. and Ms. Copet, who is here along with Lynn Fleege, is that she wasn't really given time to think about what was being presented. There was no prior discussion. She was presented with a document, presented with a piece of paper, asked to sign it. She is not an attorney. She thought, as indicated in her affidavit, she was merely accepting the receipt of that document, which really is no more than any of the other cases that have really addressed this issue. Because generally speaking, in all of the cases, really, there's never a question whether the document was delivered. The question is whether it was effective. And I think that really also goes to the heart of the DeCook matter. There's three things, three facts of DeCook that I pull out that aren't present in this case. That involved non-parties to this litigation. It was the compliance officer who we don't know what her position was and whether she's an attorney, but certainly a compliance officer knows the rules, and her language itself in the email suggests she knew what she was doing because it says, I'll waive service if by email. Second, there was extensive discussion indicated in those emails and an invitation, really an invitation by the defendant to serve via email, which is not uncommon for medical providers to say, please don't show up with a sheriff in service with this at our place of business. We'll do it by other means. And most significantly, going to the heart of why party-to-party service isn't accepted, is that it really was an arm's-length transaction. It was done electronically through email. Here in the case before the court, as already discussed, there were three appellants that appeared at the window, not just one, but three, directly with Ms. Copet. Again, opportunity for acrimony and hostility. Second, there was that personal request for her to sign that document, again, enhancing the ability for acrimony. And there was absolutely no discussion whatsoever about what was occurring. There was no discussion prior to the arrival, there was no discussion at the window, and there wasn't any discussion after that. I understand what appellant Giesecke thought, but his subjective intent doesn't go to the heart of whether there's an agreement, and in fact, Ms. Copet indicates she just told him where the court administration office was.
I had a question. Let's assume that it was a service process server rather than one of the parties. So that document, would that have been sufficient to prove service?
If it was the process server, then yeah.
Had her sign, you know, admission of service. The admission of service says, J.C. Copet, Nicola County, hereby accept service. Would that have been a good, you know, a valid acknowledgement of service?
I don't know that you would even need to get to whether it would be, because the fact that the process server did the service suffices under Rule 3 of the Rules of Civil Procedure.
So an affidavit from that person would have been just fine then?
Correct.
You wouldn't even have needed the piece of paper, but they always seem to have you sign something anyway.
Yes, they do, but
so that
correct.
Way, you know, they can avoid the whole issue of, well, I wasn't there, you know, that was my daughter, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Thank you. And we could have avoided this entire discussion if the person had done it, you know, by mail, with saying, if you don't do it, you know, if you don't return it, then, you know, you can be charged.
Correct. And that's really part of what I spend time in my brief arguing is, well, we don't have proper personal service because it was party to party, and we also don't have proper an attempt to get a waiver of service as allowed for under even the relaxed method under 405 of the Rules of Civil Procedure, because even that requires that it be done in writing, obviously a copy of the documents sent, and that specifically and what I think both specifically and specifically is that there is language that's required to be served that says, here's what I'm asking of you, here's the consequences of doing the waiver, and here's the consequences of not doing the waiver, and that doesn't exist here. There's also time to contemplate what is being asked. There's 30 days that's allotted. And there's also a requirement that there's some prepaid method of returning, and none of that exists under the facts of this case.
On the day this was given to the auditor, was this like the last day to, you know, perfect the appeal?
It was really close to the last day. It might have not been the exact last day, but it was very close to the last day.
Well, can I ask you this? Because, I want to make some of the arguments that the appellant's making here. This is a very harsh result. I mean, if the purpose of service is to give notice, there is clear notice given, and this is such a harsh result, and in that that the auditor clearly knew what this was all about and was given such notice on behalf of the appealing landowners. Why isn't there any give in the law for this situation? I keep looking at the underlying reasons the law is the way it is.
And I have to admit that I come back to the harsh result about what the consequence is if the court dismisses it for want of service. And I think, first of all, case law is very clear that regardless of the harsh result, it is strict compliance and there is no wiggle room. And I think it goes back to ensuring that there is a unified method of service so that we can be certain that the rules are being followed and applied. And in this particular case, one might be inclined to say, well, this was the county, this was the government that was being served, and the county or the government can accept a little bit of wiggle room. I think that was also probably considered in the Pipestone budget appeal case where the sheriff served the auditor personally. That was rejected despite the harsh result that the sheriff didn't get to appeal his budget. But here I think it's important to remember that this really isn't the appellants versus Nicollet County. It's really landowner against landowner, and the drainage authority serves all of the landowners. And that was part of the conversation, is that 75% of the landowners impacted by this drainage decision would be harmed if we didn't require compliance with the rules moving forward. So in sum, we would ask the court to affirm the trial court's finding that there was no agreement to make this even remotely close to DeCook, that there was ineffective service of process in this case, and to affirm the district court's decision to dismiss this matter for want of personal service. I don't have any other specific arguments unless there's question of the court that I can answer.
Was there any dispute that a number of the landowners were not served during the statutory period of time?
There was no landowner served. The only service of process was upon the auditor.
And I think the argument was made that part of the landowners were part of the lawsuit, part of the appealing group.
Correct. I think that's correct, but the majority of them were not. And one of the principal petitioners for the improvement project is Lynn Fleegley. He was not served, I think it's significant that even the attorney for the petitioning landowners wasn't served. They didn't know until I contacted them to let them know that there was an appeal.
The other question I have is with regard to the argument of the appellant that, or the appellants, I should say, that there's no requirement that those other landowners be served by any specific time.
I struggle with that. I think if you read it all in total, it should all be done within that 30 days. And I think you look globally at the rules to suggest that we're now, I believe, more than a year after the fact, and there still hasn't been made effort to serve any of the other landowners. I think this court could find that even if there was a question with respect to the service, that issue can't be remedied at this point and it can't be cured. And that's another ground. I understand the district court didn't get to it, but it would seem a waste of judicial resources to ignore the want of service on anyone else in this matter.
Well, since it's a jurisdictional issue, if there's no disputed facts, is that something that this court could consider?
If there's no...
It's a jurisdictional issue. If there's no dispute as to the facts of the, you know, the landowners weren't served.
I think it does go to a law. I'm sorry. Yes, it does go to a jurisdictional issue as well. the trial court didn't feel the need to go there because of the want of service, even on the auditor. But yes, I think the court could find that as a jurisdictional issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for the appellant, please.
Your Honors, first I'd like to respond to Judge Hooten, your last
and thank you. Discussion. I was going to ask you, so thank you.
Yes. Service on landowners is not a jurisdictional matter. The way the statute is set up, the jurisdictional matter is service on the county auditor. The landowners do need to be served, but as argued in our briefs, there's nothing in there that sets that deadline, and in fact, the more appropriate way to do it would simply be for the district court to set a deadline for service of parties in the scheduling order, as is a common provision within scheduling orders, a deadline for service of other parties. I also, Judge.
So you're saying you don't have to let these landowners that are clearly going to be affected by whatever decision that comes out of this appeal, there is absolutely no requirement that they be served or given notice of this appeal?
No, Judge. No, I'm not saying that there's no requirement that they be served. I'm saying that there's no requirement that they be served before the deadline for acquiring jurisdiction, which was the day of service, if I remember correctly.
You know, I mean, if we didn't allow an exception for the sheriff, who presumably would comply with the law and be polite when he serves the complaint, why on earth would we make an exception for your client under the Pipestone case?
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't believe that there was not a contention that there was an agreement between the parties as to alternate service in the case, in the Pipestone case. And this really goes to what counsel
for— Your agreement is the document that the auditor signed.
You're correct, Your Honor. And this goes to the respondent's argument that that there needs to be uniformity of method of service, when in fact there's not uniformity of method of service. There are exceptions per DeCook, and if this as a category is not a category of possible exception, we need to know that, frankly.
Well, my hunches will let you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, my point is there's no appellate guidance on this at this point.
Are you suggesting we should publish our decision?
I think that
What would you like the syllabus point to be?
What would I like this?
Yes.
What I would like this point to be is that per DeCook, parties can agree on alternate methods of service
merely by signing a document.
Well, no. See, Judge, that's where you get to the issue of whether or not there was truly an agreement in a particular case. Now, which is a different issue than whether, as a category, an exception to the rule can be granted.
But here, I mean, if this were a pure issue of law, that maybe that's something that we can consider and maybe publish on. If it's a pure issue of law, but here we have an allegation of waiver. In other words, your clients are saying they waived any contest as to the validity of the service.
Yes, Judge.
And this judge looked at your evidence and listened to the testimony about the conversation that occurred at the counter, and said, I don't find any waiver here. I mean, so we're basically looking at a factual determination by this judge that all this was a non-attorney auditor accepting receipt, and that there was no waiver of a known legal right. I mean, the judge didn't articulate it as clearly as that, but if you look at the sum total of the order, that appears to me to be what the judge did.
Well,
so how can we basically reverse those findings of fact?
Right. And I agree with you, of course, that the issue of findings of fact is clearly erroneous. But what I would say is, again, reading the judge's memorandum, It seems that until right toward the end, the judge practically disregards the actual document, and then toward the end gets to it. And my point is the judge does not address whether or not we submitted evidence such that the burden of proof was shifted. The judge's approach through the entire memorandum is that the burden of proof is on us, and if that's the case and means that the judge disregarded the document as a piece of evidence, that is clearly erroneous. And I see my time is up.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We will issue our decision within 90 days. Our next case this morning is the State of Minnesota versus Lopez.